What if you could learn more about your health in under an hour? The Pronuvo Whole Body Scan gives you a comprehensive look at your health, screening for over 500 conditions, including many solid tumors as early as stage one. High-quality imaging, no radiation, no contrast. Book your scan today at Pronuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com. Gain clarity, confidence, and peace of mind with Pronuvo. Invest in your health today. Visit Prenuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com.
Hi, I'm Matt Lieb.
And I'm Vince Mancini.
And this is Mad Yourself a Man. A Madman podcast where Vince Mancini and I go through every single episode of The Madman and talk about it. So happy for all of you to join us for another episode. Very, very excited. What an exciting thing it is for you to be listening to us talk about Mad Men, the world's best show about crazy guys who do advertising in the 60s, back when men were men. Give us 5 stars and a review on whatever podcast app you are listening to this on. Tell your friends, tell your parents, tell whomever you know who's been rewatching it on HBO that, hey, there's a companion podcast that is it's better than the show. Tell them that. Mm. Right, Vince?
Well, that's what you should tell them.
Yeah.
Matt said so. Tell them Matt Lieb sent you.
Sometimes I feel like I could replace you with AI. You know, like if I had a Vince bot that was just like, you know, every once in a while you chime in with, hey, I eat a pizza, because, you know, you're Italian and stuff.
That's right.
That's all you say. That's all you ever say.
I expect you to react to all of the things that you say. Like, usually you just go on and then all of a sudden you like stop, like I'm supposed to contribute something, but you were just talking and talking.
Well, I will look. Yeah, I just need people to interrupt me.
Okay.
You know, because I'm so afraid of dead air.
That's true.
Tell your friend. Also, patreon.com/frogcast. You not only get these episodes early, but you also get a bonus episode every week of the Frogcast. That's me and Vince and Frogcast Brendan talking about other things that aren't Mad Men. So do that. Do that, everybody. Make sure to do that. You know, this, I had a comment, but you know, when you like collect the clips and then you forget what your intro was? Well, this was going to be useful.
You're always asleep in here.
Yeah, not sure how I was going to relate that to giving us 5 stars in review, but you are always asleep in there. Okay, guys, I'm excited because we're going to be talking about season 4 of Mad Men, episode 5, The Chrysanthemum and the Sword.
I'm going to be thinking about like what the joke was this whole episode now because of that.
I had something, an intro about being asleep. Maybe it was something about you. I was probably going to be I could have done it when I was complaining about how you don't contribute anything to the show. Mm-hmm. Fuck. Should have used it there.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter.
Missed opportunity.
Too little, too late. Talking the Chrysanthemum and the Sword, a great episode of Mad Men. And of course, we're talking about it with a returning Pod Yourself champion. You've heard him on this podcast, and you've also heard him on others, I'm sure. He is a comedy writer, and he is the creator of the new show on Netflix right now called Strip Law. Incredibly funny show. Welcome the incredibly funny person, Cullen Crawford.
Hello, boys. Thank you for having me. I have a pitch right off the bat for you guys.
Oh, yeah.
I think while you're on Mad Men, why don't you go by Mad Lieb and Vince Mancini?
Oh, my God. This entire time.
It was right there.
How did we... producer Brent...
That's the kind of jokes you're going to get on Strip Law.
Yeah. Producer Brent, can you go back and re-edit all the podcasts where we change our names to that good pun? Thank you, Brent.
No problem. I got it.
Okay, thank you, buddy. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Oh, see, that's the kind of jokes you'll hear on Strip Law. Can you tell us about Strip Law, Colin?
I can. Strip Law is an animated comedy on Netflix. It stars... Oh boy, Adam Scott and Janelle James and Shannon Hizella and Stephen Root. And it is about a lawyer in Las Vegas who teams up with a magician to be more entertaining in the courtroom and win some wacky, dumbass cases. And it is just a joke machine gun. If you like comedy, you're going to like this show. Like,
I love that. That's a great premise for a show. This is animated, right?
It is animated, yes.
That's like what he said.
I missed it. I stopped paying attention at some point because I was.
It was
just,
like the first word I said.
At that point I was just afraid because I was like, "Who's in it?" And I thought he had forgotten, but then he did remember. I did remember.
I'm really bad at proper nouns and will forget my own like brother's name. Like I'm Sam. I've had to like promote this show and I cannot remember anything about it. I can't remember my writer's names, my director's names.
Well, once you pitch it and sell it, after that, it's like you don't need to pitch it anymore.
Yeah, I'm like an absentee landlord at that point. Right.
You're just like, this is my slum of a show. Yeah. I like it. I did it. You'll like it.
That's send a guy around. He'll be around at like 2 a.m. to like fix some of the jokes.
Yeah, perfect. So Adam Scott, when you got him on the show and you were like, oh man, that's great. Can he tell you spoilers for Severance?
He cannot. I begged him for it. And I wanted them specifically so I could put them in our show.
Yeah.
And tell all the Severance fans there's like big plot details and strip off so they would watch.
Oh, that's a smart idea.
And maybe I should still tell people that.
Yeah, just do it anyways. Do it anyways.
There is precisely one Severance reference in the entire show. Tell me if you can find it. You win $1 million if you find it.
Oh my God, $1 million.
You know how many times I would have to watch Severance to like understand if someone was doing spoilers for Severance? Like there's shit they could tell, like when they do the season recap at the beginning of the new season, I'm like, I don't remember any of that. Like
that's because it was years ago. That's the thing. All shows now contain 3 years of nothing, and then the show comes out again, and then all the showrunners are like, "You're lucky to get that, asshole." What? I've never felt treated more like a hog than the like new crop of like prestige TV.
I need to be treated more like a hog. I feel like I'm treated as a person who remembers everything that happened on a show. And
hog
like,
me up a little more,
dude. Yeah, you got to bring me back up to speed, like give me, you know, like get the remembering muscles warm before you start in with that shit, you know?
I mean, yeah, I guess you're right about that, but still, you know, I say make show faster, like Vince Gilligan says Pluribus. He's like, yeah, I don't know, come out whenever. Ugh. I decide to write it.
Yeah, I think they need more episodes and turn them out faster. That's my opinion.
Yes, I say let the quality suffer.
They need like Pluribus needs 3 more characters being like, what the fuck? What the fucking fuckity fuck? Why Vince, is this fucking happening?
Vince doesn't like Pluribus.
Ugh.
I still haven't watched it yet.
It's great.
I gave it another try, Matt. And you know what? Just her constantly demanding to know what was going on for the 17th time. I was like, I'm done with this show. I can't do it.
I also wanted to know what's going on. I feel like I'm her.
Sure.
Okay. Speaking of other shows, we're talking about Mad Men. And speaking about promoting your own show and how that's sort of an advertisement, if you think about it. This leads me to my question for you, Cullen, which is, what's your favorite advertisement?
So I had to think about this for a second, and then I remembered an ad that I truly think is legitimately really funny, and I really liked it.
Uh-huh.
Do you guys, it was like 10 years ago, there was a Rolling Rock commercial where they apologized for a commercial that didn't exist, but they did like an ad like apologizing for Party Ape, who was an ape in their commercial who partied too hard and was like an irresponsible representation of partying.
I don't remember this, but I wish I did.
Wait, hold on.
Such a good bit.
I think I have it right here. Let me see if this is it. Tell me if this is it. A message.
I've been asked to apologize for a recent TV ad where an ape parachutes into a pool party and dances in a suggestive manner with a grown woman. We film this ad because surveys show that ape tops dog, otter, and even yak as the animal most associated with pool parties. Rolling Rock is a classic extra pale lager with a rich history. And I promise from here on out, I will serve you nothing but the best.
That is fantastic.
Yeah, I love it. I think it's really funny to have an ad where you apologize for an ad and makes you picture it. Like, I love it.
There was that Super Bowl like 4 years ago where every like third commercial was a corporation apologizing for something and promising to do better.
That's true.
It was legitimate though. That was a real thing.
Yeah, it was like there was like a year where
had to be pizza like, was terrible.
Yeah, every corporation felt the need to apologize for something, and like being transparent with their apologies was really important.
I think
is partly what ChatGPT has been trained on, because it does a lot of like it does a lot of confident apologizing.
Yeah, I don't remember when that was, but I do remember there was a time where every single company was like, R.I.P. George Floyd. And it was like, so in part of that was making your commercial for Pizza Hut be about racism.
You know what? We did screw up and we are going to be better.
That feels kind of like a Don Drapery pitch. Like, you should just apologize for how bad your product is.
Yeah, that does seem like something you would pitch as like a way of like losing the client, and then they like it and he has to keep it. And then hijinks ensue. You know, that's the thing about Mad Men. It's a good show. And this is, being a show about Mad Men, it's a show about Mad Men. I'm having a stroke. And we, of course, cannot start talking about Mad Men without first playing the theme song. Woke up this morning. Mad yourself, man. Madman. Drunk. New advertising. Podcast. Mad man. All right, ladies and gentlemen and everyone else, once again, we're going to be talking about from season 4 of Mad Men, episode 5, The Chrysanthemum and the Sword. Vince.
Every time you say it, I'm like, is he going to say it right this time?
I'm having trouble every time.
It is one of those words that sounds like you're stuttering even when you say it correctly.
Chrysanthemum.
You sound kind of drunk saying it.
Yeah. Chrysanthemum.
Which pluribus, too, you sound like pluribus.
Yeah. E pluribus chrysanthemum.
The funniest thing about pluribus to me is imagining a British person saying it, because you know they'd be like, oh, it's pluribus, isn't it? Pluribus.
Yeah. Yeah, pluribus. They'd say it weird. Fucking idiots.
Come just on, guys.
Island full of morons.
I've just been watching pluribus on more television.
they just arrested one of the royals.
Yeah. Yes, they did this morning. Woke up to that.
Oh man, that was awesome.
He woke up this morning.
Yeah.
Got himself arrested.
Yeah. Apparently, it's the last time a royal's been arrested since King Charles was beheaded.
Wait, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Which is kind of crazy, because I feel like...
That's crazy. Maybe they'll behead him. That'd be cool.
That would be so sick. I would love it.
Man, they're just like rubbing it in our faces about being like a more functional country if they did that.
I mean, that's like the plus side of having a figurehead monarch.
Mm.
You know, because they don't really have power.
Yeah, he can be the sin eater and you can chop his head off and be like, we're good now.
Yes, it's actually, finally, it will prove its worth by being like the symbolic and, you know, they're like literally going to cut off his figurehead. That's crazy. Vince, can you break us off a piece of this synopsis about Mad Men episode?
Sure. After Roger Sterling, try that again.
Chrysanthemum.
After Roger Sterling ruins Pete and Don's important. Jesus, what is going on today?
You're dying.
After Roger Sterling ruins Pete and Don's important business meeting with the Japanese by doing racism, Don cooks up a fake commercial to rat fuck Ted Shaw. Meanwhile, Sally cuts off her hair and gets caught jilling off.
That's right. His name is Ted Chaw.
Didn't I say that?
You said Shaw.
I don't know.
It's Chaw.
It's spelled stupid either way.
It is spelled stupid. But Vince,
yep.
What was happening at the time that this episode was set in?
That's right. We do not evaluate a period piece divorced from its period context. We got to put some of that context back in, which we like to do with a little segment that we call the news machine.
I wipe my ass with the Wall Street Journal.
There is no big lie. There is no system. The universe is indifferent.
That's news, isn't it?
Yeah.
This episode premiered August 22nd, 2010, which means that we're going back to August 22nd, 1965. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know if you've heard this about the 60s. They were a little bit turbulent.
I believe the times they were changing.
Some shit was going down.
I don't want to hear that shit anymore. I've watched 100 people die every month on my fucking phone. Yeah. Like, they watched one guy die and were like, oh, this is so traumatic.
That's a very good point. With them, they were just like, oh no, one person died. What do we do? And it's just like, we live in hell.
To be fair, like, they were reading that while a guy was like getting beaten up right next to him.
That's true.
They were trying to read that while getting shot with a fire hose and bit by dogs.
Whatever. It doesn't sound familiar with anything happening.
Yeah. No, nothing bad's ever happened to us, huh, Vince?
That's true. That's
fucking
true.
boomer-ass energy over here being like, no, they had it worse. No, it didn't.
No, they didn't have it worse. But listen, I'm trying to get you
you're trying to be on theme and we're just throwing stones at
we're
you.
We're just mad at you.
All right. Fair enough. What else do you guys want to say to me?
I don't know. What happened in the news?
This one's from the San Francisco Examiner. You know, we got the Vietnam War heating up. Mm-hmm. Headline of a choice for the Reds. Or sorry, a choice for the Viet Reds. That's important. Mm-hmm. Johnson administration officials said yesterday, severe Viet Cong battlefield losses indicate the Reds will have to choose between intensifying their war effort or seeking peace. That's right. We got them on their heels, boys.
Yeah, yeah. Just any day now, the surrender of the Viet Cong is imminent.
The official said U.S. intelligence cannot know how debate is going in the inner councils at Hanoi and Peking and is therefore unwilling to predict which path the communists will take. They guess the Reds will pursue their current guerrilla offensive for another couple of months.
All right.
Another couple of months.
A couple of months. We'll be in and out real quick. It'll be fine. Go ahead and send more guys there, LBJ. It'll be good.
Another uplifting news. Alabama sheriff out on bail after killing. A part-time deputy sheriff charged with killing a young clergyman engaged in civil rights work and critically wounding another was freed Saturday on $12,500 bond.
Did you say part-time?
Yeah, part-time. You can
do part-time sheriff work?
Yeah. The thing that it's important to remember about sheriff's departments is that they're like kind of fake and we shouldn't have them. And it's just like a constant nest of corruption and awfulness.
Right. It was voting on the police to do racism, I believe.
Yes. There was a story in this episode that was very similar to that about like police beating up like a person who was working with civil rights who got off or something. I can't remember.
Yeah, exactly. It was one of the white martyrs of the civil rights movement. I forget which one it was. Mm. It wasn't the Mississippi guys, Goodman and whatnot. But it was a different one. Yeah.
So basically, he killed the guy, and he's out on $12,500 bail. So
How much is that in
like 120,000? I think
that's a lot of money.
Maybach. Yeah, he had to give up his Maybach.
Exactly.
Actually, I have no idea how much a Maybach costs.
I don't know what a Maybach is, but I just went with it.
It's a car.
I was like, I figure it's a type of car, probably a car.
That one's a little depressing, but you know what's not depressing is heists.
Well, I love heists.
We got a $25 million snafu. 2 daylight robbers yesterday held up an armored truck, transferred 64 sacks onto their convertible. That's a lot of sacks in a convertible.
That's how they measured the money.
We got to stop putting all of the money in sacks with big dollar signs on them.
And escaped with what officials said was $25 million in canceled checks. A spokesman for the armored carrier.
I'll explain that one because I feel like
I'm trying.
Okay.
A spokesman for the Armored Carrier Corporation said the sacks contained only canceled checks and estimated the amount to be more than $25 million. Martin J. Luddy, 32, of Woburn, alone in the armored car, was left bound hand and foot on the seat of the truck in a housing project. He told police he sounded the truck horn with his head, but residents, instead of investigating, shouted for him to stop making the noise.
Yes. Oh, yeah. I love that.
A pedestrian.
Does it at any point mention whether or not canceled checks are worth money? Because doesn't that seem like they're not worth money?
I don't think they are worth money.
You would think. I'll finish the article. It's in two parts.
I guess.
Luddy told police the thieves bumped the rear of his truck as he was driving down the high street ramp from the central artery. Both the convertible and the truck moved off the ramp, and Luddy got out to exchange identification with the driver of the convertible. During the discussion, the passenger in the car pointed a gun at Luddy, he told police, and ordered him to drive about a mile to the Columbia Housing Project in the Dorchester section.
Sick.
But no, it doesn't say whether the canceled checks are worth any money. I'm sorry.
I mean, that would suck ass to, like, you know.
So Luddy told
police. Steal six sacks of trash.
Yeah.
This Luddy is a thing police- that would happen on The Wire to Bubbles.
Yeah, 100%. 100%.
Luddy told police he told the robbers the truck was carrying only canceled checks, but one man replied, "We hear different."
One man replied, yeah.
"We hear different."
Luddy described the man as about 25 years old, 5 feet 10, weighing about 180. He said the driver was addressed by his accomplice as Rocky. They were both wearing sunglasses and rubber gloves.
This is Sopranos coded too. I like this a lot. Maybe we heard a different thing about these checks. Maybe they're not yet canceled. Oh man, that's crazy. That's great. I hope they got the money.
Another headline.
Thank you.
Dominican. Che died in revolt. Junta leader Major Antonio Imbert Barrera said yesterday reports that Cuban leader Che Guevara was killed in the early days of the Dominican Revolution last spring.
Not
appeared
true.
To be true, but there was no proof.
And it wasn't true.
It wasn't true.
He died in Bolivia. Years. Didn't he die in Bolivia?
Yeah, 2 years later.
Oh, mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, there we go. Well, look at
shot,
that.
Shot
fuck
by
you.
The CIA.
So the main, like... message of this newspaper is that the commies are on the run. Like,
that's right.
Yeah, communism is failing everywhere.
Don't worry about it. Loyal readership.
The banks win because also these were these, even though people heard different, these were canceled checks, not money.
Only canceled.
Capitalism's killing it in this newspaper.
Capitalism's great and communism's on the run.
Part-time sheriffs have $12,500 to just put up bail. It's crazy. Yeah. We're all doing all right. Finally, I got a, this is from the classifieds. It's an ad for airline stewardesses.
Oh, hell yeah.
Airline stewardesses to be based in Miami, Florida. Now accepting applications for future consideration. Requirements, height, 5'2" to 5'8". Age, 20 to 26. Weight, 105 through 130 pounds.
Damn. You could put weight in there is crazy.
Single, free to travel. Apply personnel department 9 to 4.
That is rough.
Married chicks, no fat chicks.
You're telling me no, like some 5'9" smoke show walks in. They're like, get the fuck out of here. Yeah.
You're too tall. Hey, King Kong, why don't you go? This ain't a jumbo jet.
Listen, the bathing suit we designed for you to wear, don't go up that high.
Exactly.
Sorry, Toots.
So you're scaring all the other men. You're too strong to be someone we harass. That's
insane.
They're going to have to reach too high to pinch your bottom.
My God, that is crazy. What a crazy time. Yeah. What a crazy time. Back when men were men. Am I right, men? Man.
Yeah.
There's another one, like the ad just says young girls 18 to 26, and this is the whole ad. Good figure, good is in all caps, good figure but no experience required. Call 531-5555 for an interview.
Wait,
it's just a guy's house.
it's not an interview for what? Does it say an airline? Is that
it doesn't say
nope,
what
just
it's
an
for.
Ad for girls.
It just says young. If you're young girls, you have a good figure and no experience.
Call this number. I love that. That's like you can put that in a paper. You can put that on in a bathroom stall.
Again, I'm like thinking about the thought process of like. Well, he wants 25-year-olds, but what if there's like a really hot 26-year-old? But then 27 is like too far.
Bridge too far.
Too close to 30.
Then we got 29-year-olds applying and come on.
Yeah, exactly.
Jesus, you should be dead already. So now we are all properly contextualized to talk about Mad Men. And before we do, I want to give a shout out to our good friend Ted Chaw. Of Mad Men for actually helping me for once figure out what parody song I'm going to do. And I also want to lambast him for choosing this one. And I'm going to play just a little bit of it. There it is.
Well, since they came around, Roger Sterling is seeing red.
That's all I'm going to be playing. And I'll tell you why.
Give me more.
Nope, I'm not doing it.
Yeah, who is they? Is there more stuff about who they are?
They is the Japanese. I think we can all know that from the context. You can listen to the rest of that at the end of the episode, as we always do, because this time around, not a fun one to record. Didn't have fun doing it. You won't have fun listening to it. But of course, you can do it at the end. All right, now we're talking about the chrysanthemum and the sword. Let's get quick thoughts on this. Vince, tell me about this.
I think my thoughts on this are that I don't know what I would call it, like a great, I feel like it's more of a great TV episode than it is a great Mad Men episode.
Okay.
Like, this doesn't stand to me in the pantheon of Mad Men episodes where I think of it as like a defining moment of the show.
Okay.
But it is like
it's a high standard.
It's like a solid comedy. Like it's a solid TV comedy that's Mad Men themed. I think every, I think every show or movie about doing business in the last, 60 years has had an episode or an interlude about an important business meeting with the Japanese. I think maybe like in the last 5 years that's starting to come around to being the Chinese, but like through the entire like 60s through 2000s, I think it was always important business meeting with the Japanese, like countless 80s and 90s comedies are built around that.
It's a common trope, I think, especially in 80s comedies, because like, I think that's when there was some sort of, maybe there's like a boom or something in the Japanese economy.
There was a huge, there was a huge scare that the Japanese were buying everything.
Right. And so, I agree that this did feel a little bit like in line with, it would be one of those storylines pitched by someone who's like, oh, this isn't going to have anything to do with the actual story or the character arcs of anybody. But it's going to be a lot of fun to write.
Yeah, so Mad Men did it, and they did it well. What can I say other than that?
Yeah, Colin, what did you think? General thoughts.
I this felt like just an in between episode, but that doesn't mean it was poorly done. Yeah, I think there's a lot of one scene in particular. I'm sure we'll get to it. I thought was like really expertly written.
Yeah.
But first, is this the first appearance of Ted Chaw?
Are you talking about when Roger does all the slurs?
Yeah, that's the one.
Yeah, that's the one. Yeah. Of course.
They really nailed it.
Yeah, this is, I don't know if it's his first appearance. It is.
I think so.
It might be. It might actually be the first appearance of Ted Chaw. It's definitely not quite the first time they've talked about the company that he's with and them as being sort of competition, because we find out that they took High Lie at some point, but this is the first like focus on Ted Chaw episode.
Yeah.
I feel like Ted Chaw's sort of there to be like, hey, aren't you glad that we made the show about Don Draper and not some other advertising asshole? Because guess what? It would have been
think
way
of how
worse.
Bad this show could have been.
Yeah.
Also, it made me I think outside of the obvious reasons, Don hates Ted. He so clearly wants to be Don, and I think Don finds nothing more disgusting than wanting to be like him.
Yes.
He's so like, he immediately is like, fuck this guy. Like,
as a man who hates himself, he's just like, the fact that anyone would want to be me makes me mad.
I hate my life, and you want my life, you pathetic fucking worm. Like,
yes, exactly. Exactly. I agree. I thought this was like a good middle episode. Doesn't do much in terms of moving the story forward. But I will say, for me, if you're going to do what I would call a filler episode, making it...
Are you talking about Sally?
No. No. making it Roger-based is great. I'm cool with it. If you if you're giving Roger more things to do, then I'm happy. I also did think that Sally's storyline was particularly good, and I say this as someone who's got a 3-year-old daughter, and it's now all of the Sally stuff affects me more, where I'm just like, oh, I really want her to be okay.
Yeah, you were just watching these two parents like blow it at every fucking turn.
Exactly. And I'm just like, this is actually on them. I know why she's fucked up, and could never be me, dog.
I was thinking, like, you must, like, identify with a child getting into masturbation-related hijinks.
100%. And it's like
your entire brand.
It's one of my biggest fears. It's one of the reasons I was very glad not to have a boy, because I was just like, oh, yeah, no. Hide all your robotic singing fish, you know?
just play with their dicks a lot.
That's what it'll be. I just didn't want to have another little me going around trying to fuck the fish. And
At first, when you said it was one of your biggest fears, I thought, another adult catching you, masturbating you, and driving you home, and being like, he was masturbating in my living room.
Yeah. He was masturbating. No, listen, we've all been caught masturbating. That happens to all of us. It's a big fear, but once it happens once, you start getting into it.
Yeah, start to integrate that.
Start to crave it a little bit.
Yeah, it starts to become part of you. But no, it like just watching, you know, this is sort of natural thing that both Dawn and Betty especially are totally unequipped to handle, because they just don't, you know, Dawn is like, doesn't want to hear it at all. For him, he's just like, this seems like a girl problem. I don't know. Yeah.
His only question was with a boy or a girl watching or whatever. That was his only question.
Yeah, that was great. He was just like, look, I know this is bad and whatnot, but was it hot or was it not hot? I just want to know.
Betty says, does it matter? It's like, I mean, a little bit.
He should have said,
it's the 60s.
Yeah, he should have said, Betty, it's the 60s.
But yeah, like the hair cutting thing to me is also just so brutal. This kid just like essentially reaching out, and they're like, what the fuck is wrong with you? That's my hair you're cutting.
Yeah.
Like, just every turn, just blowing it. It's so... It's brutal.
I think that scene in particular is, to me, the thing that's very interesting about that scene is like you go from, you know, Dawn has that encounter with Ted Shaw at dinner. And, you know, like clearly Dawn is not supposed to be like a good guy or anything. But I do think there are elements about him where it sort of makes you miss a certain type of like masculinity, not in the sense like, oh, he's such like, cool, he's so cool and like tough, but there's a sense of like decorum and dignity that I do think is missing. And I realize that I'm like a clown talking about dignity, decorum. but I feel like there is, especially in the business community, like there's so many.
So in what way with Dawn in this episode though?
Because he doesn't lower himself to do the competition thing like that. He's like business is not important enough for us to degrade ourselves in the way where we're like openly competing and like trying to do like spy versus spy fucking hijinks to each other. Like he's kind of like he's kind of above it. He's like,
is he?
Yeah, I mean, not to actually do it, but to be seen doing it.
I think when Ted first comes up in Benihana, where they're researching Japanese culture,
yes,
and is like, hey, man, you're like, I'm like the new you or whatever. You can just tell that Don's like, this is weird. You're being embarrassing.
he's being embarrassing.
And also, he is. I will do everything in my power to never look like this, where he's just like this level of thirst. Because what he is he's kind of like a more competent Pete Campbell.
Yes.
Like he's Pete if Pete like had slightly more
guile and riz.
Yeah, guile and slightly more riz and you know, maybe creative ability. I assume Ted Shaw also is like somewhat creative, whereas Pete obviously isn't. But like they both have the same kind of like striver, you know, slime ball type energy.
Mm-hmm.
Let
me finish that thought. Like, I mean, there's so like you're yearning for it because you're like, okay, there's at least, you know, for all the things that are bad, at least there's like the cravenness and business isn't openly supposed to be degrading in the way that it is now. And you sort of yearn for it in a way. And then it smash cuts to that scene where he's like dressing down the dressing down the babysitter because she didn't keep his daughter from cutting her hair. And you're like, OK, I'm sorry. I apologize for pining for that one small aspect of this.
Yeah.
What did he want her to do, man? Go to the bathroom with
the- Dude, it is funny because both of them, both Dawn and Betty, are so weird about it in this way where, like, Dawn is yelling at the babysitter, who's his neighbor, by the way. And I'm just like, you know, you still got to live next to her. Like,
yeah, you're going
to
see her again,
Have some self-preservation instinct.
Didn't he meet her by, like, passing out in the hallway.
Yes.
Yeah, like, yes. She helped him get into bed and stuff.
Yeah.
It's really weird to high horse someone after that.
And just like in any way, it being her fault is like so insane. And then, of course, you know, Betty starts yelling at Dawn about it as if it's Dawn's fault. And it's very.
Well, it explains why Dawn's yelling at the babysitter because he knows yes. he's going to catch a metric ton of shit.
And it explains why, you know, why Sally is the way that she is. You know, she's wants to get the fuck out. She just wants her papa. That's all she wants. And very sad and very sweet. And, you know, I like this episode. I didn't think it was like the best or whatever, but I really liked it. So let's get into it.
I guess there's a decorum just in the sense that they're not like they have an idea of what they think they're there to do and they sort of do it and they don't seem like they're chasing every single fad. Like they're at least trying to avoid the appearance of being like completely shameless, I guess. I don't know. Like it's like I watch.
Yeah,
I've showed you the Will I Am videos. Who's like, you know, how he's like the biggest tech grifter in the world now.
Yeah, I
saw this one where you know he's promoting his like AI something, and he's like, and he's always doing some sort of like TED Talk sort of presentation.
Yes.
And he's like, a few years ago, you know, someone came up to me with NFTs, and like, I didn't get NFTs. Blah blah blah. And then he starts going in about how he didn't get that, but now he's big into you know this AI crap and he thinks it's important for XYZ, and I'm like, I guarantee if I Google this guy's name and NFT, like the first thing that comes up, and I was like, yeah, like 2 years ago he was investing in an NFT company. And it's like just like the weird shamelessness, like I feel like that would be prohibitively embarrassing for someone to do Mad Men days,
at least like Don Draper to do.
I see
so many characters on Mad Men who would do anything.
Later seasons are getting ahead of it, but like when they do like want to bring in a computer and Don's like, this is this is weird. Why do you want this?
Yeah, he's like, this is evil. Yeah, I have a slight recollection of him having a straight meltdown when he's like face to face with a computer for the first time.
Well, there's a different guy who really has a meltdown.
Oh, maybe it's different. Yeah. Well, we'll get to that in later seasons. But for now, let's get into this episode beat by beat. We start with Miss Blankenship.
Man, I could watch 2 hours of Dawn and Miss Blankenship.
Oh my God, she's wonderful. She's just so shitty at her job. And Dawn is so, like, being mad at an old woman will never not be funny to me.
And they really got all the meat off the bone in different ways that she is bad at being his assistant.
I was going to say, they invented so many ways for her to be bad. Like, impressive. They thought of every possible thing.
Yeah, she doesn't know how to like work the phones. She's
in front of his subordinates. She's like, you're sleeping in here all the time.
And then at one point she just yells like something about like your daughter's late for her therapy appointment.
Yeah.
It's so good.
It really nailed it when Roger and who's the other partner?
Bert
and Roger walk in, and she's like, Bert and Roger are here for you.
Yeah.
I was like, this is fucking wonderful.
So
I think the first thing is, like, in the first scene, they're having an argument about when she's, like, allowed to buzz him, and he's trying to explain it to her, and she's like, okay, well, anyway, you got a phone call, and he gets on the phone, and she's, like, in the middle of the phone call, she's like, you have a partner meeting. Yeah. And it's like, you just put him onto a call.
It's so incredible. She's so great. That actress is so great. Like, man, it's so fun. There's one. It's a different episode where she's like carrying like 15 bottles and struggling, and he's like, "You can just bring one." And she's like, "You drink it so fast, I gotta." God, I love this fucking show.
She's so good, and she opens the episode with a lot of funny antics, and he picks up a call from a New York Times reporter who wants a quote from him about something that Ted Chaw said, Ted works at the competing mid-size advertising agency, Cutler, Gleason, and Chaw. And they so far have taken Hi-Li, and they've taken now Clearasil.
Hi-Li.
from this company.
That doesn't seem like a big enough deal for a reporter to be writing an article about it.
It's crazy. Like the idea.
Oh, this firm has gotten 2 clients from you. Like, do you have a comment?
Yeah, do you have a comment? This guy says he's better and hotter than you with a bigger dick. Yeah. What do you say to that?
Well, I think the idea was that Ted Shaw obviously like planted that story. Yeah.
Right. Of course. And what I love is, you know, his response to it is like perfect Don Draper fashion, where he's just like, never heard of him. Like, brilliant. Yeah.
So but he does get just a little bit of effort in there where he's like, this is on the record, right?
Say that
I never heard of him. So it does, like, he's not just, he's a little bit aware that he wants you to know he doesn't care, which is a little bit of caring.
Yeah. And I think me talking about the decorum, I think that is part of the crux of the episode, is them sort of trying to, like, show in some small way the changing of the guard between guys like Don, who, you know, didn't ever think of themselves as part of the story, being like behind the scenes, because that's what you did. And then, you know, the new guy is Ted Shaw, who's like, okay, well, working the media as part of this, like, we're part of the story and we know it and they know it. And, you know, we're going to be performers now.
Yeah. So
what do you think, Matt?
Oh, yeah, I agree, man.
Never mind. Shut up.
Oh, well, fuck you then.
I have a comment here from the New York Times. Yeah. Apparently, Vince told Matt to shut up.
Never heard of Vince. I know Vince Mancini, but I am Mad Lieb. Very good. How did we miss it?
How'd you miss it?
4 seasons. So the partners meeting is happening, and they're reading about, you know, protests in Selma happening. Pete makes an astute point. When Bert is like, oh, what are they protesting for? And he's like, because Lassie's allowed in the Waldorf and they aren't. And I was like, man, I love woke Pete. He's great.
This was my hot take about Mad Men for years. Yes. And no one wanted to hear it, that Pete is the secret hero of Mad Men.
Yes.
100%. He does that one thing where he like pressures that nanny into having sex with him, and that's fucked up, but probably no worse than like what most of these characters are doing.
Oh, yeah. The 60s. Yeah,
he learned it from watching Kenny Cosgrove.
Men in the 60s were baseline rapists.
Straight up. But Pete is like first to all this stuff. He's like, stop harassing everyone. Like,
yeah.
He's like, why are we not taking black people's money? Like, he's like ahead of everyone, and he doesn't have the like unpunchable face of Don to like help him with any of this. He's like right about everything down the road. Pete's secret hero. I love Pete.
I love it too, and I love watching Pete like develop into a character that I actually like. And now his flaws are more human and become less about like, oh, this is the worm playing the worm role. You know, he's great. So Honda Motor Company is unhappy with their firm, and they want to hear some pitches. Pete wants to pitch them. Roger does not want to work with the Japanese because he is still mad about World War II. This is... I mean, we touched on it earlier, but this is such a really, it's a funny storyline. It's almost sort of got the sitcom kitsch to it, I guess. But also, it works because of the setting. Like, he fought in the Pacific. So for him, it's like a vehicle for him to do funny racism, yes. But also, it is, I think, something that at least... is relatable for the period of time it's set in.
Yeah, and then there's also the wild card of Bert Cooper being the original weeb. So you're like wondering how that's going to go over between like the libertarian weeb and Roger, who still hates the Japanese.
It's also like he's so got this like young Bill Murray charm to him.
Yes.
And we've only pretty much seen it be charming up until now. And then to see like him saying this horrible shit is like a real wake up call. Like, it's almost the reverse of Pete Campbell's like, oh yeah, this guy that we loved unconditionally is like fucked up and a product of his time. And it's like kind of hard to watch.
I feel like that was what watching the Chevy Chase documentary was like.
Yes, it was exactly. Because
it's like with Chevy Chase, you can like pinpoint the exact moment when like the shtick like stopped working. Because like they played all those like out of context clips from it where he was being sort of mean to the interviewer. But I was like, he's doing the thing that he's always done. It's just that joke is like people don't.
What if I was an asshole?
Yeah, they're not treating "What if I was an asshole" as like the joke like they used to.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. I've never fully understood in what sense he was funny, but I'm sure he was. Yeah, I've never it never
he
hit
fell
with
down
me.
Really good.
No, I feel like I feel like that about most of the early SNL cast, but Chevy Chase, I'm like, well, obviously he's funny because he's, you know, he's like doing he's doing like old school clown stuff.
Yeah, so when he does the old school clown stuff, it's good. But I've never
Most of it.
Yeah, but whenever they give him lines to say, I'm just like, I don't know. Yeah, I guess funny enough.
Well, he does them fast, and he makes a funny face afterwards.
I suppose. To me, I put him in the same thing as Blues Brothers, where it's like, I guess you had to be there.
That, yeah. Man, I don't get the joke. Blues Brothers.
Nobody knows. Nobody knows. It's like just a thing.
A joke
it's,
in Chinese.
It's like Frank Zappa. We're all just like, yes, we love all of this stuff. Yes, good.
Yeah, my dad showed me this when I was a kid, so I have to think it's good.
Right. This is just forever. We just got to go, yup, the hump, Blues Brothers and Frank Zappa, two good things. So while he is, Roger's yelling about this, this happens.
Look, I don't expect you to understand this, because you were a little boy. I used to be a man with a lot of friends. Then World War II came. And they were all killed by your new yellow buddies.
Jesus. If Birnbach can do business with Volkswagen, we can do business with anybody.
The war is over, Roger.
Why don't we just bring Dr. Lyle Evans in here?
That'll be enough of that.
Who the hell is Dr. Lyle Evans?
It is time for
I'm so glad someone said it.
It's time for our segment, What? Here we go.
What?
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 Got him on the whole thing.
What?
I love it.
What?
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 What? What?
What? What?
All right, so
I was just getting into it. I could have gone way.
Yeah, I know.
Amazing
bumper. Yeah. It would take a long time for me. The full theme song to What would be insane. So this stumped me because I was immediately like, am I supposed to know who this is? This is a 60s thing. Vince, did you do some research?
No, I thought you were going to do it.
Okay. I do know what this is. I remember this from
Colin,
the show.
Can you tell us about Dr. Lyle Evans, please?
Unless I'm misremembering, Dr. Lyle Evans is the doctor who accidentally cut Bert's testicles off.
Wait.
There's a huge reveal that Bert doesn't have balls. Like later down the road.
That is fucking nuts. I did not know that. So I did some initial reading on this. Apparently at the time, so this isn't revealed yet. This is an Easter egg for a future reveal, I guess, about him getting his nuts cut off. I didn't read that far into it, but apparently at the time this was almost like the show was so popular that people were immediately Googling stuff right after to understand the reference. And so there is a article from The Guardian 15 years ago. It says, Mad Men's Lyle Evans Google bomb dupes viewers. Dr. Lyle Evans reference on cult U.S. drama sends viewers on an online goose chase.
Jesus.
And so it's a whole article about how people are just trying to figure out who the fuck Dr. Lyle Evans is. And this is, apparently happened before the reveal that he's the doctor who cut off his balls. But man, it is, it's crazy that this, you know, cause we've covered The Wire and we've covered Sopranos, and both of those shows, it's not that they, you know, Google didn't exist then, but it was the memification of TV shows was not yet a whole thing. We are now in, you know, what is this, 2010 when this came out, this episode, Vince?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we are now at a time where people Google shit.
I mean, people would have been Googling stuff for The Sopranos too, but The Sopranos
not real stuff. They would have just been like Meadow tits like that.
Sure. I mean, The Sopranos is not a period piece. So like, you know, when you did references, it was generally the stuff that people in today's world would know.
What
about.
Is Gabagool?
Yeah. Who are the Italians? But yeah, so Dr. Lyle Evans will be revealed in later episodes to be a doctor that Bert Cooper once had. So he storms away. Everyone must receive and read a copy of The Chrysanthemum and the Sword, which Vince, did you research that at all? Like,
oh, no, I didn't.
All right, well, great. No one knows anything.
you didn't do that.
All right, I am curious, like, what that book, how racist and wrong that book absolutely is.
It would be, you know, and I would love to know. And I guess we'll just never know.
It's a 1946 study of Japan by American anthropologist Ruth Benedict, compiled from analyses of Japanese culture during World War II for the U.S. Office of War Information.
Yes, this sounds right, because the way that they all read this book in order to try to understand the Japanese just enough to have their business is very funny. I mean, we have Pete buying cantaloupes. We have people like bringing chrysanthemums and then taking them away.
Going to Benihana.
Going to Benihana to learn more about the Japanese.
It's, what is so clear is just ask Bert. Bert seems to know fucking everything. Right.
Bert is a fountain of knowledge when it comes to the Japanese. Yeah. This dude has literal hentai porn in his office.
Yeah. Although it has received harsh criticism, the book has continued to be influential. Two anthropologists wrote in 1992 that there is a sense in which all of us have been writing footnotes to chrysanthemum since it appeared. The Japanese, Benedict wrote, are both aggressive and unaggressive, both militaristic and aesthetic, both insolent and polite, rigid and adaptable, submissive and resentful of being pushed around, loyal and treacherous, brave and timid, conservative and hospitable to new ways.
Yo, they're good and bad. Dude. They're black and white.
Seems pretty useless, honestly. Yeah. they're whatever. They're everything.
Yeah, Japanese are a very specific thing where they can be whatever.
In conclusion, Japan is also a land of contrast.
This is, I love that. But yeah, so everyone's reading that in order to get some insight into the Japanese. This will actually come in handy later. And boy, will it be interesting. But first, Don takes the Japanese Honda guys on a tour of the office. And then as they're doing the tour, they have a translator is translating everything. And then
I was surprised that they didn't bring E-Honda in there, like the main.
Wow. I kept waiting for it.
The main guy from Honda. I thought he was going to do the thing when shoot his head across
the room. The sumo wrestler from Street Fighter. Yeah.
And then Ken Cosgrove could do...
Oh, shit. Okay, all right. Well, now I'm into this bit because he brought up the Ken thing. But yeah, it's a great scene with Joan where Joan shows up and I guess I'll just play it. This is what happens when Joan shows up.
I've got a very good list of steakhouses, just ask. Not very subtle, are they?
No, they are not.
All right, so that is beautiful.
I have a question about that scene.
Please, please.
Because he says, how does she keep from falling over in Japanese? And she they'll laugh, and she's like, they're not being very subtle. And he says, no, they are not. Or he said, they're not very subtle, are they? No, they are not. When he says no, they are not, is he talking about the businessman or is he talking about Joan's tits?
He's talking about Joan's tits.
That was like,
he's doing an ambiguous double entendre.
He nailed it, man. That was. Yeah.
Did you say double D entendres?
Double D entendres.
Yeah.
Well, she actually, too, is like the best at dealing with them right before that, where she's like, I hope they didn't take you to Benihana.
Yes.
Like, David Ogilvy brought us to Benihana. And then they're like, check out these the cans on this broad.
Yeah, look at this broad. Can you say motorboat in Japanese?
Yeah, it's like, the piece of property got a good line off.
But yeah, I love that scene because there's like, the, you know, there's a good button on it, you know, no, they're not, just a nice little, you know, funny button. But also it's like, they don't need a translator to love tits. There's something about the universality of just like, look at us all loving tits together as a species.
I loved all those translator bits. I thought him being like, I don't know what this room is for.
Or it's like, this is, it's too complicated for me to translate.
Yeah.
So they are in the office, they're giving the, you know, Pete is giving out gifts, they're doing a whole cultural exchange thing where he has to say no thank you a bunch of times before he accepts a gift.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, I wanted to bring up the cantaloupe thing.
Please. You researched the cantaloupe and not the fucking title?
It was an accident because there was just an ad in the San Francisco Chronicle and it said 6 cantaloupes for 99 cents.
Yo.
And I'm like, that's a pretty good deal. And
that's
I'm like,
a great deal.
Who's buying six cantaloupes? Like, do you question. Have like six business meetings with the Japanese? Like, who? What are you going to do? How many fruit salads are you making with six cantaloupes? That's so many.
Do you have to buy all six to get the discount?
I would imagine.
I would imagine so, or they wouldn't have said six.
That's a good point. Seems like kind of ridiculous.
Do you think Pete read some, like mistranslated something in the book or misinterpreted something where 100%. He's like, I gotta get him a cantaloupe.
100%. I like he just says what's in the what's in the gift.
He also wants them to open it like it's Christmas. She's like, I just want to see your face when the cantaloupe comes out.
There's also a subtle move that the businessman does where he like, after he finds out they got Johnny Walker and he got
they
a cantaloupe,
switch.
He switches
on. Yeah, white elephant's his ass.
Yeah, and, seniority, dude.
Yeah. So
that's like Confucian shit right there.
Roger shows up in the middle of this to do some old-timey racism. And my God, just talk about like, what do I want to say? Dense.
It was like Abbott and Costello where everything they said was like a setup for him to say
crazy.
Something.
It's so good. Here's that.
I didn't know this meeting was happening. Then again, I know how some people love surprises.
I apologize, gentlemen.
Well, it was last minute, and now, unfortunately, drawing to a close.
I have to warn you, they won't know it's over until you drop a big one. Twice.
The meeting is not over. We have yet to present the rules.
So now you're dictating terms.
In this packet are the conditions for the competition.
We don't want any conditions. We want it to be unconditional. Akira, go ahead, tell them what I said.
Roger, stop it.
You don't get to kill this account.
Well, you know how they are. Maybe it'll kill itself.
Enough.
Just, I mean, beautiful. I could watch him do old-timey racism like all day. It is truly, there's never been, I think, a character on television for me who the worse they are, the more magnetic it is. Like, he did blackface.
I heard John Slattery ad-libbed all those, too. That's crazy.
Shut up.
Yeah, he was supposed to be respectful during the meeting.
Yeah.
They had to rewrite the entire episode. Direction.
He took it in a different direction, and they were like, you know what? It worked.
Like, damn, this is really good. I truly loved it. I thought it was great.
It's funny how he gets, like, less clever as it goes on, where he's just like, we don't want any conditions. He starts throwing a tantrum, basically.
Yeah, he gets like legit mad. And it's funny because you see him do similar types of racism, you know, just for fun, almost for kicks in previous episodes. And this is the one that actually like it comes from a real place of hate because he's, a World War II veteran. And that doesn't
excuse
it. He's
the Walter Sobchak of World War II.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. it's kind of like gives him more depth as a character, not that much more, but fun to play with a dimension that's already written in. And
I wish we would have found out that like what his actual job where he was like doing paperwork on
curious about that
on like, a battleship or something.
He was like the bursar or something.
He was the bursar on a fucking warship.
I think Roger's whole thing is that he will go to the easy answer no matter what. And like racism is the easy answer for the war being bad for him. Like,
right.
Yeah. Just he always goes to the most easy, charming thing.
Yeah.
Charming is obviously a stretch in this scene, but like, he's just not a serious guy. Like,
yes. It's weird. I find him charming no matter what he does. So
for sure.
I just love Slattery. You can say whatever you want. I love him.
I mean, that like the maybe they'll kill himself line is delivered so perfectly.
It's perfect.
So perfect delivery.
You don't get to kill this deal. You know they are. Maybe it'll kill itself. Yeah. Come on. That's great. Genius. Is that producer Brent?
It's me. Hey. I just want to remind you guys we have a reservation at Benihana to prep for our big meeting with the Chinese businessmen.
That's right. Yes.
Dang.
Yeah. So we gotta all eat at Benihana's, have ourselves a hibachi.
Are we going to the real one this time, or are we going to the one in Tyrese Gibson's backyard?
It's Tyrese's.
I made sure we got Tyrese's house.
We gotta go to Tyrese's. He never does the onion right. All right. Well, we got to take a quick break to eat some hibachi, but please stick around.
I never heard someone pronounce hibachi racistly.
Was it racist? Yeah. Okay. Can I do it again? I didn't.
No, I loved it. I didn't mean
to do it racist. No, it was funny. I made it Spanish for some reason.
No, it's great. I love
it. No, it was not meant to.
That's what E. Honda says before he shoots across the room.
God damn it. We'll be right back.
What if you could learn more about your health in under an hour? The Pronuvo Whole Body Scan gives you a comprehensive look at your health, screening for over 500 conditions, including many solid tumors as early as stage one. High-quality imaging, no radiation, no contrast. Book your scan today at Pronuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com. Gain clarity, confidence, and peace of mind with Pronuvo. Invest in your health today. Visit Prenuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com.
And we're back. This is Mad Yourself a Man here with Colin Crawford. What's up, dog?
Yo, we're back.
We're back.
People forget that Karl Marx was the greatest economist who ever lived. And whatever you think of his solution, the problem he posed was about the catastrophic up and down of the marketplace.
Well, no.
No.
Too much?
Nope. Brent, you replace that with, a woke quote, please.
I'll figure something out.
Thank you.
I'm going to tell you the story of Tyrese Gibson's backyard hibachi.
Please, for the people who don't know.
So yeah, he has like a full-on backyard hibachi setup that he has named Gibsyhana, and I believe he like invites people to come to it. I don't know how his love of Benihana's came about, but my fan theory is that he did the second Fast and Furious movie with Devin Aoki.
Who is
actually the daughter of, brother of Steve Aoki. I forget what their dad's name is, but their dad is actually,
Rocky, that's right.
And he is the founder of Benihana's. So he did a movie with the daughter of the founder of Benihana's. And I like to think that's how he got his love of Benihana's.
You know, I've never been.
Really?
Never cool. been.
It's worth the trip.
I wanted to go. I don't know where one is.
They're everywhere, dude. Just look up teppanyaki. It's funny. People ask me, like, mm-hmm. you know, should you go to teppanyaki? I'm like, oh, yeah, it's amazing. Oh, yeah, is the food good? Not really, but, like, I don't know.
It's like a show.
It somehow transcends the fact that the food is, like, not that good.
The food's, like, not bad. It's just really oily rice and shrimp.
It's fine.
It tastes good. Yeah, but it's not, like, going to blow your mind or anything.
It tastes good in the moment, but, like, as soon as you divorce it from the moment at all, it's not good anymore.
So, wait, would it be funny to just get it to go?
Yes.
Like you order like Benihana on DoorDash.
It will not taste good to go. And you can do that, I'm sure.
It's like the
restaurant I'm the most confident I could just cook the food myself.
Yeah. You know what? Because you're watching the guy doing it. It's but you could just do it with that flair.
I could not do it with the flair.
Exactly.
We took our son there for his second birthday thinking it would be like, you know, cool for, you know, him to get a show. And as soon as he let the grill on fire, my son like screamed and like dove under the table.
I love that.
All right, yeah, two is probably too young for that.
Yeah, never try to do something fun for your kids or else they'll hate you. It's kind of that is the thing we all learn at some point. Speaking of Benihana, they go to Benihana. We see, Chaw and Don at Benihana. And the reason that they are at Benihana, of course, is because they're trying to both woo the Japanese Honda people.
Incidentally, Benihana was invented in 1964, so a year before this episode takes place. So in 1965, Benihana was like the hot new thing.
So Roger and the partners come in and Roger apologizes. He says, you know, sorry for doing all this. This is after he has a huge fight with Pete, in which Pete basically tells him the only reason you're doing this is because you don't want anyone else to have business because otherwise we won't depend on Lucky Strike. And he's right about that. So Bert says it's all over, even if they set a meeting, with them. They expect you to come to the meeting and essentially commit seppuku. He's like, you know, the only point of the meeting so you would resign in disgrace. He knows this because they haven't received a gift from them yet. Then Dawn gets a genius idea. because he gets a gift from Chaw, who at this point has like said, essentially, I'm in your rear view. You know, I'm about to like speed past you. Everything that you do, I can do better.
Mm-hmm.
And so Don realizes the one way to fuck him is to shame him. He actually reads something from the chrysanthemum and the sword that is actually useful. It's a quote that he pulls out of his pocket that says, "A man is shamed by being openly ridiculed and rejected. It requires an audience." So, using Japan rules, he says,
"I don't understand how that's Japan rules.
I also don't understand how he gets, I'm going to fake a commercial out of that."
Yeah.
This is so, I was
thinking, I had to watch that like four times to be like, what's happening?
Okay, so this is what I was thinking. He was, he is talking about how, like, Bert basically tells him, as your resident weeb, as the world's first weeb, I know everything about the Japanese. They expect you to come to this meeting and resign. And in that resignation is the shame part of it, you know, because it'll be in front of people. He reads this in that book and he decides he's going to do a reverse Uno seppuku shame, and he's going to flip it back on them. So he's going to show up and make them be the ones who are feeling shame in front of him. And the way he's going to do that is he's going to make Chaw cheat. And by making him cheat, he's going to say, this is unfair. You've broken your own rules by accepting this. I resign.
So, yeah, I mean, I understand all that. I just don't get like how a shame needs an audience gets him to. I'm going to trick Ted Chaw.
Because he's smart and cool, Colin.
Yeah.
It is a good idea. I just think the quote's a little unjustified.
It makes total sense if you're cool and get it like I do. Mm-hmm. But yeah, no, I think it's awesome because he's so hot.
He's very hot.
And so like when he says all that, I'm like, you're a smart guy. And it's like, it's kind of, you know, it's, this is like, I think the point in the episode that it makes it a little bit sitcom-y. I mean, you know, it's, they have a nice montage sequence in which they're like tricking him into thinking that Sterling Cooper Draper Price is doing it. And so they're getting all, you know, competitive. I like that they call in either Kurt or Schmitty. I forget which one the guy
is. That's Schmitty. I think that's Kurt's Schmitty? The German one.
Yeah, they call him and he's working for Ted, and Schmitty is like, oh yeah, Don, he's like a genius. And immediately Ted is just like, do you ever call me a genius?
Yep, right there. Difference between Ted and Don Draper right there.
Yes, just he's immediately completely.
I'm genius insecure. Too, you know.
Yeah, you know, I'm really smart. You work for me, asshole.
Ted's commercial sounds fucking sick. I do have to like,
I know
it sounded know. Pretty cool.
Yes, he did have a good idea right off the bat. And I also like that whoever it was that was else was in the office, you know, one of the other partners was just like, we don't have the budget for that shit. We're not shooting shit.
That's it. Sounds like one of, it sounds like an 80s McDonald's commercial with that, with like shredding guitars in the background.
Right, yeah. But it's like in the 60s, it's like the first, you know, 80s McDonald's commercial.
Yeah.
You know, he's smart too.
By the way, do you ever think about what it must have been like to be John Hamm, where you're like a 36-year-old, like out of work actor
with a really thick penis?
Like, with a really thick penis. Like, I think he got like expelled from college in like a hazing incident and he was like working as a bartender.
What?
He never really had like a real job. And then someone comes on along and they're like, hey man, we got this show that we want you to star in. It's about like the hottest, coolest guy in the
smartest
world.
Smartest guy. And after this, you will be the voice of every high-end product for the rest of your life.
Yeah. We want you to play the hottest, coolest, smartest guy in the world. And the show's like, this show's basically about you and how cool you are.
Yeah. I mean, I think we can all relate to, we're all just kind of waiting for that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
To happen to
the
us.
The thing is, we're all older than that now and it's past us.
That's a weird way of looking at it, Vince.
I'm getting more handsome every year.
Yeah. I think it's better to look at this.
Me from too, but it was a low bar.
An optimistic light, in which case we're younger than our parents.
Well, he has said, I think, that he was like getting rejected from roles for being just too like comic book handsome. Like, the, you can't be on this sitcom. You look like Superman. Like,
yeah.
Oh, what a horrible thing for him.
He does have that hair that doesn't look like contemporary hair, you know? It's like it just it like naturally
that's true. Whenever,
goes into like
in anything else he's in, I'm just like they're trying to make his hair look now and it's never going to look now.
Yeah, it's like that's natural weird. Clark Kent hair.
He's perfect.
Imagine hair. Him with like a dirtbag like Gen Z party mullet. Like,
oh dude.
Broccoli.
Oh broccoli.
Yeah. Ooh, the broccoli hair on the hill.
He's just saying, bruh.
Yeah, no memes of that.
Dude, that would be sick. Yeah, anyways, so they trick Cha, they leave the Honda meeting, he feels really good about his commercial. Don shows up and he goes, hey, you guys broke your own rules, I shame you. And then he gives the money back. And then we find out, congrats, Honda is not leaving Gray, but they love Don. And most importantly, Cha is out of the running for breaking those rules. They all celebrate. So that's how that storyline ends. And now we got to talk about Sally.
Mm. Poor Sally.
Poor Sally. So
finger bang Sally.
All right. This is no, stop. You guess. Stop yourself. Grow up. See, this is why you're never going to get that call.
Okay.
The one John Hamm got.
I'm just going to keep bartending and hope
you're
it happens,
keep
man.
Bartending. They're like, oh, no, he's too disgusting to put in our Mad Men or whatever they put you in. Fucking Pizza Hut show. So.
Wait, tell me more about this Pizza Hut show. Yeah,
it's a show about a guy who runs a Pizza Hut.
I worked at Pizza
Lead
Hut
character's
for a
name
while.
Is fucking idiot. We thought about you, Vince.
This sounds great.
Fucking idiot. The lead in Pizza Hut show. Anyways, so.
Hey, who wants a pizza? Oh, man.
Well, is your wife crust? Because I'd like to stuff her.
My penis is stuck in the machine again.
Yeah, oh, boy.
Oh, what? Boy.
Why you keep putting the penis in a machine?
Hey, I thought you said I could put the penis in the machine.
Don't shame me in front of the Japanese businessman who are visiting Pizza Hut.
All right. Are we writing the show?
Guys? I like the show.
So Sally. Sally is staying at Dawn's. Both Sally and Bobby are. But Dawn is going out. He has a date. And
are you guys tracking which Bobby we're on at this point? Is this number three?
This, I think, is Bobby number three.
I have face blindness for child actors. So I just like,
yeah.
I'm just like, oh, shut up's on screen again.
Is there I think we get to five. If we get to Bobby five, is there a Mambo number five? Bobby number five?
Oh, we could do it. We could do it. Although I believe I did Mambo number five during The Wire at some point.
Mm.
What was the one, two, listen, three, four, five? Marlo's got the best dope on the West Side. See, I am Weird Al Yankovic for episode synopsis parody songs.
I like it.
I like it too. So Sally is there. And Bobby is there. And Dawn is going out. We've got the nurse neighbor girl whose character's name is Phoebe, which was it was a hassle looking that up because I don't think she shows up more than twice. Kind of just a character that they wrote out eventually. And Sally is jealous of the fact that he's going out with a woman and, you know, wants her dad's attention. And in order to get that attention, she tries to model herself, her hair, after the babysitter Phoebe, and then comes out of the bathroom. And honestly, her hair didn't look that bad. You know, I thought it was like, I mean, it was, she definitely cut it, but it also seemed like an easy fix.
Am yeah, I crazy? I mean, they do fix yeah. it. It looks totally like normal little girl haircut.
Right.
They do fix it.
I think like, you have to do some like... you sort of have to bring a lot to that scene as a viewer because you have to assume like, yeah, there's no way they're going to let him cut some child actor's hair.
Yeah.
Like too crazy.
Yeah, I guess so. But yeah, she comes out and then just, I love the way that this scene is written because there's so much.
Bobby.
Yeah, here's that scene.
Jesus, what did you do?
You look like a mongoloid.
Is it that bad?
Bobby, go to bed.
Sally, get over here.
Are you and Daddy doing it?
What?
I know what it is. I know that the man pees inside the woman.
Where did you hear that?
Girl at school.
I think Girl at School is actually almost like that's, she's pretty much right. That's how it goes. It's not, it's not P is the only difference.
Yeah, close enough.
So anyways, I think she's asking perfectly.
I mean, it's a, you could argue it's a type of P.
What if John Hamm, what if Don Draper told her that, and that's what he's been doing this whole time? He's just been peeing in all these women's butts.
That's a little known, that's like Bert's testicles. It's a little known part.
The Don Draper does not know what sex is or how to have it, and he's just peeing in women's butts all over the place, all over town.
Yeah, it's like, I don't know. They keep, that's what, I have three children.
And all they ever say after sex was like, wow, that was interesting.
Wow, that was a lot of pee this time.
you really had to go.
Yeah. No, I would love it if Sally, it's after she said, where'd you hear that? And he's like, my dad. but no. So that is like, you know, her first issue here. I mean, the way it's written is maybe it's like overly on the nose, I guess, you know, because it's she very much is just like, I want my father's attention, and I am doing things for the sake of my father, and I'm having confused feelings about sex and my father, but in a Freudian but not weird way. They're able to toe the line pretty well. I'm sorry.
It's funny how much they give her such a rich inner life over the course of this show, and Bobby's just Bobby's just like Pikachu, just saying his own name all the time. Like, there's nothing to Bobby throughout the entire show.
Yeah, I love it. I think Bobby had one scene ever in which he showed, I guess, like any outer life, inner life, life at all. And it was like a great dawn scene, I remember. And that's it. And then
there's one where Sally's spitting out the food on Thanksgiving, and Bobby's like, actually, I like marshmallows.
Right, right.
Yeah. Bobby's like sub-sentient. He's just like,
yes. Yeah, Bobby.
Someone filled my trough again. Oh, boy.
Yes, Bobby exists to co-host this podcast with me. How about that? How about that? Very Italian. Nice. All right, so Dawn comes home and yells at Phoebe, the babysitter, blames her for the river of shit that he is now about to get from Betty, and he gives her severance money and is just like, fuck off.
So, I have a question. Like, yes, I'm sure he's mad that he's going to get a river of shit. Is he also mad that his wife's going to find out that he decided to take his third date in 2 months on one of the nights when he has the kids?
100%. Like,
that's
a straight up psychotic move.
I think he's also a little bit mad that he doesn't get to fuck this babysitter now.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's like, oh, I was going to fuck you, but now I got to be mad at you, and I can't fuck you now.
I came home early from Benihana just to fuck you, and now I'm mad at you.
I brought you an onion volcano, and this is how you treat me? Yeah.
I'm glad it's cold and flabby now. I think that is exactly right. He's mad at the fact that, like, you know,
it's the 60s, so I didn't know how bad this was going to taste as leftovers.
Yeah.
We don't have microwaves yet.
Yes. Exactly. I could put this in the fire.
I brought you two metal spatulas and a steel grill.
Actually, I would pay $10 million to watch Don Draper, the character, try and reenact the routine he saw at Benny.
Yes.
Taking his swigs of the liqueur and setting himself on fire.
Just throwing shrimp everywhere.
Making loud noises, just hitting shit together.
Yeah. So they drop off Sally at the house, and it's the house he is still paying for. By the way, she is wearing a beanie. And then after her hair is revealed, Betty loses her mind and slaps the shit out of her.
What the hell happened to you?
Calm down.
You cut her hair?
No.
I cut it.
I'm sorry.
Hey, Betty. You didn't have to hit her.
You're right. Because it doesn't do anything.
Jesus.
You have picture day and forget about your sleepover.
Kids do this. You never did this?
All I wanted was to have long hair. In fact, when my mother was mad at me, she would threaten to cut my hair.
I love Betty so much. And what I mean by that is, like, as a character, the way that she doesn't know she's trauma dumping when she does.
She's all over the fucking map. She's just a raw nerve right now.
Like, she's like, not only have I never cut my own hair, but also my mother would chase me around with the scissors and say, hey, ugly fat girl, give me your hair. I will eat it.
Also, very funny to hear two 60s dads be like, whoa, what are we hitting the kids for?
Like, yeah, that's true. Yeah, they're like, what do you think? Did you mistake her for your wife?
They're both looking at each other like, which one of us has to slap her in this situation? Yeah.
They rock paper scissors.
She was yours first. It's your job.
Yeah. She's kind of being hysterical.
What's her husband's name?
Henry. Henry Francis.
Henry, man. Oof. I haven't watched this show in 10 years, and I hated Henry the first watch through.
Yeah.
He's the most sane person on this fucking show.
Yeah, yeah, he's very normal. And it's like, it sucks because, at this point in the show, I feel like you're still a little bit like, if this is your first time through, you still a little hate him because he totally just like went after, you know, her and had an affair, and you're like, oh, I mean, you shouldn't hate him. It's not like he ruined Don's marriage.
100% Don's fault.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But
he ruined his own life.
I was reading
that tweet today that someone did where it was like, the 90s had an entire genre of movie that was just Michael Douglas getting so horny that he ruins his life. And I feel like Henry Francis clearly like got so horny that he ruined his life. Like he was like, his kids are grown. He's divorced. He was free and clear. And he's like, you know what? This chick's so hot that I'm going to gain 3 kids under 10 and a baby daddy drama.
And an unstable person.
Yeah.
At this point, watching it, you do realize how much he just fucking inherited just madness in his own life. And that sucks. But also, whatever.
Yeah. I mean, as a stepdad, like the whole time I was just silently shouting, no, run.
But yeah, it is. It's interesting with Henry in this episode, because at one point, there's just like a scene where he's trying to, like, he's having penis trouble and he's like trying to like mush his grubby little wiener into Betty. And like,
what does he say?
He's just like, oh, mash it in there. I think he keeps saying, no, he says, hold still, yeah. Which is.
Yeah, he says, your husband's a madman. I'm a mash man. And then he's trying to mash it in.
Yeah, exactly.
Hold still. I'm trying to pee in there.
Don't make any noise.
Yeah. Shut up. Can you make
about you?
Can you make
your pee if you make noise?
Can you make your body temperature colder? So he is. Yeah. So it's weird. Henry has a hard one in this episode. So apparently, Henry convinces her to convinces Betty to not punish her and let her have her sleepover. So at the sleepover, Sally's sitting watching a 60s TV show called The Man from U.N.C.L.E. Mm-hmm. Whatever the fuck that is, a sci-fi show.
It's called The Nephew.
Yes. The Man from U.N.C.L.E., a.k.a. The Nephew. And she's at a friend's house and she's sitting on the couch and she starts masturbating. And her friend is sleeping next to her. She's just rubbing herself, and her friend's mother catches her.
I also don't think she got that. She's like barely touching her own leg, and the mom just sees this and just like freaks out.
I really feel like
she's got at least the knuckle in there. It doesn't count.
That's how I feel. I feel like just say you're scratching it. Mm-hmm. I guess she's 10 and she hasn't like learned to like lie about it.
Yeah,
I think the clip they chose to have her like have this awakening to was like
interesting.
Pretty perfect. It is the kind of thing that you watch when you're a kid and you're like, it's two men tied up together while one with a mask is like saying shit to them. And you're like, I don't get why this is doing something to me, but it is. Like that's a good choice for that thing.
That was like young Matt Lieb every time someone was like sinking in quicksand.
100% though, you're not wrong. You are not wrong about that, because that is true. It's like, I don't know why, but sinking in quicksand or being eaten slowly by a snake, just one of those kid horny thoughts. Don't know why. Don't have it now. Normal now. But anyways, so she gets caught masturbating, and then she gets driven home. And Betty learns from the mother what happened. And I have that scene. Just an incredible scene. Really, a lot happens. Here's that scene.
She was in our den on the couch, playing with herself.
I would have done the same thing.
What? I am masturbating. That kind of behavior is not allowed in my house, and certainly not in the presence of my daughter.
I am masturbating. I should go.
Can you believe that happened, guys? I have to do stuff to make it fun.
I would have done the same thing.
I would have done the same thing. But yeah, no, in that
I am masturbating.
Yeah, it was fun just mashing those letters up, making them say stuff. No, yeah, she tells her, and it's like a really mortifying scene. I kind of expected Betty to say something along the lines of like, I'm mortified, or get mad, but instead she just kind of is, you know, she does read as very human in that moment where she's just completely freaked out by it.
Yeah. And
Henry says, you know, if it gets serious, there is a solution.
And cut her hands off.
For a second, I was like, oh shit, are they going to talk about a lobotomy?
That's yeah, what I was I like, he's going to Rosemary Kennedy around.
That's what I thought too. I was like, oh shit. It is the 60s. But no, it turns out it's therapy.
Again, Henry, the most noise is like, what if we just all went to therapy?
Yeah. Although his reaction to Betty going to therapy was kind of funny.
Yeah, he was like, wait, what?
It's like, what? What do you mean? Like, she was like, I was bored. I don't know.
They should do a separate show about the guy who like invented the lobotomy, where like someone brings in their daughter who's masturbating, and he's just like, well, I've been wanting to try this thing.
Let's see how much brain we can scoop out.
I got this ice pick. I kind of want to just like jab right in there and see if it does something.
I've tried a few things. One of them makes him masturbate even more. So I'm going to go as far away from that as possible. And the other one makes him stop masturbating, but also stop breathing. Just keep bringing in the girls. I'll get it right one of these days. So yeah, Dawn finds out from Betty about the masturbation. And they are fighting about it, of course. They fight about who is responsible for the sexualization of their child. Neither of them at any point stop to say, maybe this is part of growing up. And also, what are we going to pretend like we don't masturbate? Betty does this thing where she's like, you don't do this in public or in private.
Yeah.
And I'm like, God, I just, what a sad thing.
Yeah, how do we not freak this kid out about her own body? It's not a thing that anyone talks about.
Yeah, it's and also, I mean, you know, it's probably like par for the course in terms of the 60s. But I don't know about you guys. I grew up in a family where we just talked about, you know, it as a joke. It was like a thing, you know.
Mm-hmm. Oh, definitely not my family.
Oh, yeah? No, you guys
didn't. Very Irish Catholic.
Oh, okay, yeah.
In fact, we probably were too traditional for me to go to therapy if I got caught masturbating at a friend's house. They'd be like, go talk to the priest. And then yeah.
The only person who's rubbing your dick is me.
Yeah, exactly.
Never forget that. If you want someone to rub your dick and get you off, just call me, all right? Otherwise, Jesus Christ, unless I put it in my mouth. I'll put it directly in my mouth, Colin.
What if this actually happened to me? And this
I know, I'm sorry.
How I remember, it did not. But
this is how you're working through it.
Just reminded me of this thing I've been repressing for
years. Oh, Colin, put it back in my mouth. Anyways, Dawn and Faye.
You always just have hippie parents like mine where they like scare you into being a wasp.
Oh, yeah? That's fun. Yeah. I like that happened to you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so Don is reading it. Faye. Oh, yeah, he's talking to Faye. This is the first time we realize that Dr. Faye Miller is not married. Uh-oh, are they gonna fuck? Probably.
Yeah.
And Don respects marriage so much. He never would have.
Right, exactly. So, oh, you were married. I didn't know that. In the eyes of God? Well, then I will stay away.
He's a little bitchy at the end of that scene where he's like, have fun with your fake husband on your fake dinner plans or whatever. Yeah, like, he took it personally that she's lying about being married.
Yeah, as if he's not lying about being Don Draper.
Yeah.
So finally, we get to therapy. Betty talks to the woman who will be Sally's therapist, is Dr. Edna. And Betty immediately starts opening up to the therapist. And
so this is the scene that I thought was really like,
oh yeah,
really well written, is like this therapist immediately clocks what the actual situation is here.
Yes.
And she doesn't realize that she's talking about herself whenever she talks about her kid. Like,
yeah,
it's just really, really beautifully written scene. I really thought it was great.
Yeah. Agreed. It was, it's great too, because you see, just enough of it. And it doesn't take over what the show is or what the show is going to be, because there's like the one thing that I was worried about early on in the series when she starts going to therapy, which was like, I can't take another show in which therapy is the vehicle.
Yeah.
And what I love about it is it does just enough to show Betty's Michigas and simultaneously humanize Sally in this way where you're like, you know, Sally's a victim of this woman and is a victim of her parents and all that stuff. And then Carla takes Sally to the therapist. Sally walks in, door closes, end of episode. Oh boy, guys, is there a scene?
What a picture. What a television
what
picture.
What a television show.
There's also kind of a funny song over the credits, but I can't remember what it was now.
Yeah, what was it?
Hold on. It was a song about either like touching myself or something. Like, it was referencing something in the episode.
Oh, was it? Oh,
hold on. I got to
watch it long enough.
Hold on, let's see. I got it right. This is, I can play it because I can do pretty much anything on a computer. Here we go. Here it is.
Have a brand new.
I have a brand new hairdo.
With my
Yeah, it's a good song. Mm. It's a good song. It's a great ending. Is there a favorite scene, a least favorite scene, or something we didn't touch on? Vinch?
Yes. Match.
Vinch Mancini.
I think we talked about it. I can't think of anything that we missed. That
beautiful. Colin, do you have anything we missed out on talking about or something you want to highlight?
Anything we missed out on? Going over it in my head.
Survey says.
No, we got it all.
We got it all.
You
can't ask for more.
One little thing.
Oh, I thought fuck!
The shot of her riding the scooter on the like white psych was a really, like, it just looked good. Like, I thought it looked really nice. And like, I was like, I wish more stuff looked like this.
Yeah.
That was my one thing.
That was a good thing. I liked that a lot. And I liked this episode a lot. If I had to give it a letter grade, and I do, I would probably give it a B+. Vince, what would you give this episode if you had to give it a letter grade?
Yeah, tough. You know, I'm going to have to grade it according to Japanese standards, because this is the Japanese episode.
Oh, absolutely. Just don't do the accent.
And as you know, they give everything a B+. So.
Oh, wow. That's true.
The Japanese give everything B+.
People don't know
that's
that.
That's in Sword and the Chrysanthemum.
And Colin Crawford, what would you give this?
The Sword and the Chrysanthemum is where I read that.
What would you give this episode if you had to give it a letter
grade? I'm going to get off of the letter grade scale and just give it 2 fingers up.
All right. Mm. 2 whole fingers up. If we add
a super finger, if you will.
Yeah.
I was trying to reference masturbation.
So
just super making finger. Sure my joke
it's
is
a,
clear.
It's a Dane Cook bit, famously. Well, so that's a solid.
I was referencing Cook.
Solid B+ episode of Mad Men. But I would say a solid A++ episode of Mad Yourself a Man. Colin Crawford, thank you so much for coming on and talking Mad Men with us.
Thank you for having me. It's like my favorite show.
Hell yeah. Where can people find you and find your work?
Oh, I'm going to be off the internet soon, so don't look for me on the internet.
All right.
But please watch Striplaw on Netflix. It's my favorite thing I've ever worked on, and I hope it'll be your favorite thing I've ever worked on.
Absolutely. And it's got a lot of funny people on. It's the good writing staff, and it's got a good voice staff. So everyone should definitely watch it. It is out right now. There will also be a link to it in the show description.
You know what? Probably a good administrative staff, too. I don't know that, but...
I bet you got good admins in there.
Mm-hmm.
But the writers double as admins.
Give them a B+.
Yeah, B+ for the admins. Colin, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you, guys.
Smoking, drinking, joking, cheating, groping, squeezing, broken 60s guy.
Patreon.com/Rockcast. The $8 tier gets you a shout out. You get a prep school name from Mr. Vince Mancini. And Vince, we have 3 this week.
Okay.
3.
I will put on my 3 prep school named sized turban.
Well, yep. I forget every time that it's turban now. And our first name is Steve Kneb.
Oh, Kneb. I'm Knebbing over here. We call this guy the canoe.
Kneb the canoe. All right. I like it, actually. Thank you. Next is Chris Farugia.
Ferrugia, what are you, region of Italy?
Huh? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We call this guy Rouge.
Rouge.
Hey, Rouge.
Rouge, because Ferrugia.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay, all right, fine. And last, but certainly not least, Jay Wilson Davis.
Oh, what do we call this guy, Jay Wilson Davis?
Jay Wilson Davis.
What we call this guy? Winner, because he's got a W right in the right
you
in the middle.
Yeah, but you can
he's,
do better.
He's snacking on a
can
W.
Can you do better?
I can do better than that. I gotta do better.
Yeah, I guess you don't have to do better than that.
What's wrong with who doesn't want to be called the winner?
Yeah, we're calling this guy the winner. I like the winner. The winner's good. You know, you know what? I'll take back me saying you can do better than that and say what a great name, Vince.
Thank you,
Vince. That was a really great name. And you yourself can also get yourself a prep school name by going to patreon.com/frogcast and joining the $8 tier or above, and you get that shout out. And if you haven't heard your name, then please email us, just like Joseph Ira Roth did last week. Turns out that I had already done his name by the time he had emailed, but he wrote, "So, like, I'm not going to cancel my membership over this, but why must I be made a fool of every time I listen to the shout-outs? Do I look like a bitch to you?" From Joseph. And then I told him, we did your shout-out. It just hasn't come out yet. And then he's apologized. But be like Joseph and yell at me if you haven't heard your name in a while. Give it a few weeks, okay?
Just yell at Matt. Being yelled at is his natural state.
It makes me come good. So please let us know, frogcast@gmail.com, for all your questions, comments, and concerns. Vince, what is a Google Voice number?
415-275-0030.
All right, everyone. Thanks again so much for listening. And until next time, I don't think about you at all. Well, since they came around, Roger Sterling is seeing red. Took him by surprise. Yeah, that's a Pearl Harbor of friends. Oh, Honda, you look so fine.
Look so fine.
Roger seems to be more time for him to work with Honda. Help the labor crush Teddy Jobs.
Yo, what up, bitch? My name is L.A. Matt. Hey, look at me. I'm already starting to rap. You're probably wondering why I'm rapping this early. And it's because I listened to the song after I did it and I realized that it sucked. And I was like, it needs something. And I'd rather not put out a mediocre product, bitch. Suck a dick.
Cutler, Gleason, and Shaw. Sally Draper masturbating, sitting next to a sleeping friend. Thinks that sex is when a guy pees inside of a woman. Sally, she got her head. Betty instantly slaps her. You gotta help her and help stop Sally from growing up.
You know what? Hey, I'm back again, bitch. It's Matt. And here I am, another rap. Cause I don't wanna do every single part in the harmony. That is hard. And if I tried, it would take too long, and then I wouldn't have time to do next week's song. And that's why I'm gonna probably stop it right here.
You know, at one point I said that I wasn't gonna do these anymore, or that I was gonna do them less, so consider yourself lucky to even have kind of a Draper D story. You know, like I'm doing my best. I bet next week's gonna be so good, probably. Yeah. I'm a bitch. Okay, Colin, can you say, you know?
I'm a bitch.
Thank you. That's what I wanted to say.
Easter should be the best day of the year. It's a celebration of the resurrection of hope. Come to Crossroads Church and celebrate an empty tomb and a living hope. Info and service times at crossroads.net.